Okay.
3, 2, 1. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Calangio Heroes, a video podcast produced by the Cholangiocarcinoma Foundation. I'm Jennifer Weaver, and I will be the host of this episode featuring Sarah. And Sarah, could you tell us how to say your last name? I'm not sure.
Sure. Ritma.
Ritma. Okay, great. Sarah, could you tell us just a little bit about yourself and how you're connected to the disease of cholangiocarcinoma?
Sure. So in the summer of 2020, I had made some healthier life choices and had stopped drinking altogether. Usually in the past, when I had taken a break from drinking, I had noticed that I slept a lot better, but it was the opposite. So the summer of 2020, I wasn't sleeping well, and I thought that was interesting. So I kind of started to dig around a little bit, do some research, read that iron can be associated with a sleep process. So I had asked my doctor to test my iron levels, and surprisingly, they came back really high. And that led me to do 23andMe, which is genetic testing. Mm-hmm. And I did that in September of 2020. It turned out that I do have two variants for hemochromatosis, which isn't really a concern. My ferritin normals are normal. But I also found a variant for a liver lung disease called alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency. I didn't do anything about it in 2020 because I was incredibly healthy and didn't really think that I needed to be concerned with it. So fast forward 2 years to February 2022, and I was looking into, I've had some autoimmune issues that have yet to really be diagnosed. So I was looking into celiac disease, and my doctor, who I have a really good relationship with, requested that I do my complete blood count in February of 2022. So I did that, and my liver enzymes came back mildly elevated. I think they were 13 points off the top of the range. So very mild, very easy to dismiss. I talked to my doctor, and the belief was maybe I was fighting a virus, and that's why they were mildly elevated. But I knew my baseline data, just from going to the doctor and doing my annual blood work every year, that they've never been elevated before. And so I remembered my 2020 results from 23andMe, that I had this genetic liver lung disease that I called alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency. So I had learned a little bit about that, and they sent me a referral for a gastroenterologist. Mm-hmm. So we met. He was quick to dismiss it too, thinking that they were mild, and he's seen much higher liver enzymes, and I seemed healthy. He ordered a full abdominal ultrasound at that point to investigate if alpha-1 was truly an issue in my liver. And that came back normal, and there was no lesions, which was unsettling to me the more I had learned about alpha-1 and I knew that it could cause liver issues. So I called him back the following week and requested another ultrasound. He had offered a liver elastography, I think I'm saying that right, not sure, of just the liver to make sure that the alpha-1 wasn't misfolding and causing cirrhosis of the liver. And it turns out that I did have a lesion that was missed on the first full abdominal ultrasound. So from there, it was thought to be a hemangioma, which is a cluster of blood vessels. Was not that on the CT. And I went through all the tests, and was referred to Mayo Clinic in May. Mm-hmm. And they did an MRI. And the MRI said that it was worrisome and thought to be cholangiocarcinoma, which at the same time of my diagnosis, or that it wasn't really a diagnosis yet, it was an MRI finding, mm-hmm. which they thought a woman in town had died of it. So I knew it was on my radar, but it wasn't until I met with the Mayo team, did the MRI, and then they sent my scans to the oncology surgeon, and he said, don't touch that spot, let's take it out because it's worrisome. And so my diagnosis day and my surgery day at Mayo were June 17th, the same day. And it was cholangiocarcinoma stage 2. So it was a pretty wild ride to going from, mildly elevated liver enzymes to the diagnosis of a very rare cancer.
I'm just impressed that You just didn't take the doctor's word for it. I think a lot of people, once they're like, oh, it's not a problem, I've seen this before, much higher, that yeah. they would have just dismissed it. So what was inside you that kept pushing to go, no, I need to have more tests or something else looked at?
Well, there is such a fine line, I feel like, in the medical community of being a hypochondriac, or, you know, being perceived that way, or you're a Googler, you know, you're, and it has such a negative connotation to it. And I don't right. think that it needs to have that, because if you can sort through information and look through credible sources and educate yourself, then all the power to you, you know? And so that's what I had done with Alpha One. And I knew that the protein, I knew that it could misfold into the liver. I also knew through talking to the Alpha One Foundation that you can't be a carrier for the disease. It's dominant inheritance. Mm-hmm. So I think what, by educating myself on it and getting that first result that the full abdominal ultrasound was normal, it just didn't sit well with me. There was a sixth sense that I needed to keep pursuing it and that my liver actually needed to be examined in more depth. And I thought I was a little crazy at the time to, you know, but at the same time, there was a driving force of, it just wasn't sitting well with me. And I think that I was easily dismissed because you're healthy, you know, you're young, you did this genetic test and you found things before they actually expressed themselves. And my point to them was, I don't want to be a patient of yours when I'm, you know, in the my 50s and my organs have failed because of hemochromatosis or because of alpha one. What can I do now? And so it was just kind of a relentless pursuit for answers. It's hard to explain, but yeah.
No, I just think it's amazing that you were so in tune with your body and, you know, listened to your intuition, because I think sometimes it's just easier, like they're the professionals and we just advert to them, to whatever they say. And so that's why I think it's important to just follow your gut instinct. It's telling you to keep going after more results or more tests or even getting a second opinion, third opinion.
Exactly.
I think it's great that you're sharing your story, because had you not listened, this stage two could have advanced.
I think about that every day, that if I would have, accepted that full abdominal ultrasound and the normal finding, I could have said, I did my due diligence and I'm going to walk away. But there was also, I also felt like I was getting misinformation from some of my doctors, not to say that they, about alpha one, because it is rare and it is misunderstood. And they were told that I was a carrier, but I knew from talking and doing my own research and talking to the foundation that you can't be a carrier for it, because if you have a variant, you have risk. And I think that having that genetic piece was super important for me, and doing the research and not accepting it, and feeling that, you know, we needed to go a little bit deeper. And I just didn't want to be dismissed as a healthy individual who didn't have risk, you know? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So you had mentioned the foundation. So at what point did you get connected to the foundation?
That happened after my diagnosis. So
that was in 2020?
That was in 2022. I'm talking about the Alpha One Foundation. Sorry. Gotcha. I learned a little bit about that. The cholangiocarcinoma foundation came in June of 2022. So the first time cholangiocarcinoma appears in my records is at an MRI done by Mayo in May over Memorial Day weekend. And that's the first time I saw it in writing as a possibility. It wasn't a definite, but it was a possibility that it was going that way. And it wasn't until my surgery on June 17th that was my diagnosis was the same day as my surgery, when the pathology was done on my tumor. So at that point I was hospitalized, and I actually had Googled cholangiocarcinoma survivors. I knew it was a dismal diagnosis, but I knew there had to be people who had survived it, and I wanted to hear their stories. So I came across Lisa Crane, and that led me to the foundation, which I joined, I think, when I was in the hospital. And I put my feelers out trying to find a community of people who knew about this really rare disease that had a, you know, statistically online, it does not look good. But I knew that there had to be more advances in treatment than that. I was hopeful, I guess. So reading Lisa's story, I think, is what led me to the foundation. And then I received my welcome packet in July and joined a Facebook group, and have learned a lot about it from other people, their stories. And I just I feel fortunate that I found it when I did, but I don't feel naive that it, you know, it's always in the shadows. It's an aggressive cancer. So I don't ever want to say I'm so fortunate. Like,
oh yeah,
I am careful, you know, and you have to be vigilant and educate yourself. So it's, yeah, that's how I found you guys.
I'm glad you found Lisa. She's a 12-year survivor of cholangiocarcinoma, mm-hmm. and she is a volunteer and a mentor in our Cholangio Connect program. Mm-hmm. Is she mentoring you at all? How do you stay in touch with her at all?
I've messaged her on Facebook a few times, and then I just met her. I went to the Chicago Regional Cholangiocarcinoma Symposium.
Oh, that was just recently, yeah.
That was last week. Learned a lot from the professionals there that deal with this disease daily, and it was very interesting to hear from Lisa and Melinda, two long-term survivors, and then to hear from the professionals at University of Chicago and all the different aggressive treatments that they do for this disease and the advancements that they've made even since 2020 with FDA approvals. And it's, you know, there was hope there. It's encouraging. And I saw her there as well. So,
well, you sharing your story is also giving others hope. And, you know, sharing that you really just listen to that intuition, I think is going to help others so that they listen to their bodies and what their mind and their hearts are telling them too.
Yeah. And I think it's important. It's surprising how many people I talk to, including my own husband, who don't do their annual doctor's visits to get their annual routine blood work. So you need to know that baseline. It's so important. It's, you know, an easy thing to do. And then when those numbers start to change, then you can, if they change, then you know your body, you know what your baseline is, and you start to ask questions. But without that information, it's hard to ever know, right? So that helped me a lot as well. Right.
Yeah, Melinda Bikini is our director of patient services, and in December she'll be a 13-year survivor.
Amazing.
So it's great that you were able to meet her. Are you going to continue to be involved with the foundation?
I absolutely would love to. I think it's disheartening to know that, you know, some of the statistics that they presented at the symposium with a 70% recurrence rate despite a resection, things like that. But also they presented all the cancers on the board and how much research funding each cancer gets, and breast cancer is really high up there. And, you know, it's more common, I should say. But the rare cancers that affect people and how just underfunded they are. And it's disheartening. So I actually have been talking a lot about what can I do to be more of an advocate and to get more involved in the foundation and spread awareness, because being in this Facebook group, you see these, how it's affected people from all walks of life, from all age groups. Statistically online, I think it, I don't know, what does it say? Like a 75-year-old or 65-year-old male.
Yes.
That's not what I see. And that's not who I've connected with. In fact, I've connected with mostly women ages 35 to, I'm 42. So 35 to 42. They've told me stories about how a woman in Hawaii, same thing, mildly elevated liver enzymes. She questioned it and found it. She got a second opinion. A woman who was in labor, delivered, and her child didn't really recover well from the delivery, found it that way. So, you know, it affects everybody and it doesn't discriminate. And so I would love to get involved in more advocacy and awareness.
Well, this is a great starting point in doing Cholangio yes. Heroes. But one thing that you said just a minute ago was that, you know, this diagnosis impacts everyone. It's no respecter of persons. But I think more so when you're diagnosed, your whole family is diagnosed.
Absolutely.
So what kind of support did you have?
That's a great question. So I went to Mayo Clinic in Rochester for my surgery, but then I came back, I'm in Michigan, and I'm receiving care locally from an oncologist, but then also in our state at the University of Michigan. And some of the things that I've done that have helped me is therapy, processing it, working with a therapist who understands the cancer journey. Mm-hmm. That's huge. University of Michigan has an art therapy program, which is amazing. They sent me a box of art supplies and I work with an art therapist through different projects. That's been very, very healing. So those things, friends have shown up for me in ways that I can't explain, that want to go for walks and want to hear about things. And, you know, it's been, I listened to something the other day about how God shows up in the people around you. And I see that a lot. And so I put the supports in place to help me with the emotional piece of it as well. And my family, as you know, my daughter loves my art therapy class, and she runs into my office when she gets home from school and she wants me to teach her the art that I learned through my art therapist. So yeah, it's affected everybody, but I think putting those supports in place for your emotional well-being is super important.
No, I love that you said that. The foundation also provides those resources too as a support. And I love that you found it on the Facebook group page as well. And then you connected to Lisa. And so, you know, knowing that you're going to be dealing with things and that you don't have to be alone doing it is really important. You know, it keeps your spirits up. So what are you doing now? Do you have treatment now?
I do. So I am doing the adjuvant therapy, capecitabine or Xlada, which is considered the mop-up therapy for any rogue cells that might be getting ideas to get together in my body. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing that. I will be doing a mid-chemo. So that's for 6 months. That started in August and that will go through January. And that's my first line of treatment. And I think, you know, the statistics on that are they're okay. It's better than doing nothing, but they're not super promising. So again, it's just being aware that that recurrence is possible. I'm doing a mid-chemo scan to monitor that. And I will be scanned and under surveillance for the next 5 years, every 3 months or so. So I feel like I have a good team in place, but I've learned even through all of this that you still have to advocate for yourself, even when you're on the chemo journey, right? Because you know, I don't know. It's always, where's my pathology? Did you get that? You know, it's been a couple months and you just kind of have to keep advocating for yourself. It doesn't stop.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I think what is really important that you actually show being so vibrant, you're just really vibrant in this, this interview, is that life doesn't stop either. I mean, a cancer diagnosis is just a part of life. And I think that you exemplify that you're just still thriving. Despite.
It's funny that you say the word thrive, because that through my art therapy, that is the word that we picked. In fact, it's on my little stone that we made through art therapy is thrive. And I'm a photographer. So I went back through my collection of photography and I picked out the images that represent thrive for a display at University of Michigan. If I get accepted, we'll see. But I think that part of thriving is, it sounds so cliche, but it's the gratitude piece of it, right? Like thankful for the friends who have shown up, thankful for the doctors who have put in that extra effort to help me along the way, to write the referral to Mayo, thankful that my surgeon at Mayo didn't biopsy it and decided to take it. I mean, there's lots of things along the way and you're right. Life goes on. I mean, I'm a busy mom. I have 3 kids. This week they have dentist appointments and haircuts and my son got braces and my dog goes to the groomer. And so, you know, I'm thankful that I feel okay enough to do it, because the alternative is that, you know, it's sad too. So yeah, I'm here and I think that it's heavy, the diagnosis, but you have to force yourself to be grateful and to choose hope. Without being like the toxic positivity is exhausting too, but it's recognizing the paradox of the two, right? And choosing to focus more on hope.
Exactly. And I also think that if there's those down days, that it's okay.
It's absolutely okay. Mm-hmm. And I've had those down days. Whew, I've had them. Ask my husband. I've had them.
Yeah.
I expect more of them in the future, right? And it's, yeah, it's saying to yourself, okay, like it's okay to not be okay is the saying, right?
Right.
And then you take the moments and you appreciate the good ones that you can.
Well, I love that you're choosing hope, and I'm so glad that you took some time out of your day to be a guest on Cholangio Heroes. Those of you who are listening, we're talking with Sarah, who is a cholangiocarcinoma, which is bile duct cancer survivor. And I love that I picked up on that you're thriving, because I can see it in your countenance, even virtually.
Thank you so much
for sharing that, because I really think it's going to help others and also help them to choose hope. Absolutely. People who want more information, please go to cholangiocarcinoma.org. cholangiocarcinoma.org is a long URL. We're aware of that. So we've actually shortened it. You can also find us at curecc.org. Thank you, Sarah. Do you have any closing remarks?
No, I just appreciate the opportunity and thank you for taking the time to let me tell my story.
Thank you. Join us next week for a new episode of Cholangio Heroes.
That was great.
It was so good. It was so good.
That was like, I think that's going to be one of my favorite episodes ever.
I think so too. Oh, I know. It was so good, Sarah. I really feel like your energy. And so it's amazing that you're like, Thrive. It's interesting you said Thrive, but that's how I felt when I was talking to you.
It's funny because I'm actually like, I can't share my screen, but I've gone back since 2013 and I picked out all the photography images that show Thrive, but I had to put a filter on it. So like my criteria was it had to have contrast and darkness in the photo, but then something had to be thriving in that darkness. So that was how I selected 25 images from 10 years is that filter exactly. So when you said that, I was like, Thrive.
Well, I'm going to send you some information because there is a photo contest with Cure Magazine.
Yeah.
I think what you're talking about would be a great submission for this contest.
I would love to. And that's what, so my art therapist is like, you have to submit for our, you know, gallery. And that's where I'm doing it because she asked me to. So I hope she accepts me because it's a ton of work.
But I'll pray for you and cross my fingers, especially with the Michigan admittance. I hope that works out for you too.
For what?
Michigan.
Michigan. Yes. No, yeah. But I would love to use photography and if there's a different way. I also want to become more involved in the advocacy for Cholangio. One thing that I keep thinking about, I posted it on the foundation's page today, was, so Amazon lost, what was her, Mercedes from Cholangio.
Earlier this year, wasn't it?
Right, yes. Yeah. And she was their creative producer. So I'm like, has Jeff Bezos given money to the foundation and research? Because if not, he needs to.
He needs to. I agree. Yeah. I agree. Great idea.
He's probably in space right now. But, you know, like, how do I... How do I get more involved on a local level? Like I know people, I can name 7 people in town that have it, which is very strange to me.
Well, Melinda's a good contact. I know she's going to be definitely getting our care teams together.
Okay.
And if you've got that many people in your local area to create a care team, Melinda would be the one to work with you. Emma Moth is another one in patient advocacy that will help you tremendously.
I'm going to put an email address on the screen. This is how you can reach all 3 of them at the same time.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's advocacy@cholangiocarcinoma.org.
Okay.
And that's you'll reach our whole advocacy team, Melinda, Lourdes, and Emma.
Yeah.
And they'll tell you everything you need to know.
I was even thinking like, you know, these are my shower brainstorms. Like if I put the exhibit of 25 images into a book, could I sell that for proceeds to go to Cholangio?
Right.
How do I do that? You know, I just more awareness.
Well, I've actually published a book, so I can help you with that.
Really? No way.
And I can help you get the copyright submitted to the Library of Congress. So yes, let's stay in touch.
I don't even, so that part hurts my brain. I'm like, I don't even know. So
you want to copyright your images. Trust me.
Yes. Okay.
People lift them so badly off the internet. And
I've had companies take them off my website and use them in their advertising.
It's only like $65 to file your copyright, especially if you have it in a book, all of those photos are copyrighted because they're in a book. That way, if a business does that, you can go after them for a lot of money. So,
I'm going to get in touch with you because I think that would be a cool thing to, if they do display this exhibit of 25 images, that seems like an approachable coffee table book to put together, right? Not too complicated.
No, not at all. I think it'd be beautiful.
Yeah. And then if I could do all proceeds go to the foundation or whatever.
That would be awesome.
That would be a cool way. And I think it'd be cool for my kids to see too. So,
yeah. I'll definitely.
You could also use KDP because that's what we just used for our book.
Yeah.
That's through Amazon.
And it's free. What is it? It's called KDP.com. That's how I published my book too. So Rick is right on it. And it's the best way to do it because it's free.
Katie, like K-A-T-I-E?
No, KDP. K-D-P.
Yep.
KDP.
That's a good suggestion.
And that's Amazon. So they will print it and distribute it through Amazon. And you don't have to pay for it, but the money for the printing, of course, comes out of the sale of the book.
Right. So for example, my book was the Amazon cost was $4.26. So I charge $14.99. And so I get the difference. So it's about 60% royalties.
Okay. And then can you set it up to fund to the foundation?
Yes, you can.
Okay. Cause that would be really cool. And then the artwork lives somewhere. Cause right now it's just on hard drive, you know, or people ripped it off my website and it's living somewhere. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe. Well, cool. I'll stay in touch with you. I'll email you
that
contest. I'll email you that contest today.
I will do that for sure. I'm all prepared to thrive.
Right on.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sarah. That was so great.
Okay, awesome. Thank you.
You have a great weekend.
Bye. You too. Bye.
Bye.